Please prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true. With thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary for you.
I'm Grace Bella Harmon, board certified dance movement therapist and embodied grief guide. Body Grieves, Spirit Calls is an open exploration of the connection between grief, embodiment, and spirituality. I believe the grieving is an inherently sacred process that deserves and requires its own attention and energy to fully integrate. Through personal stories, reflections, and interviews, I seek to highlight the ways in which grief can bring us home to our bodies and to a deeper connection with the spirit that holds us all. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. Welcome to spring if you're in the northern hemisphere, or fall if you're in the southern. I am so honored to share this conversation with you that I had with Melissa Riley. Melissa is a clinical psychologist and a coach specifically for mothers who don't have a loving mom in their life. So maybe it's for mothers whose moms are dead, or who just aren't loving or supportive. This conversation really hit me on a very personal level, and it is something that I don't hear being talked about very often, this very specific grief of mothering without a mother. And I really hope that it nourishes you. We get into a lot in this conversation. We talk about Melissa's own experience with grief throughout her life and the way that grief showed up for her when she was pregnant and after she had her first child, and how it didn't look like grief as she would expect it. Melissa talks about her research in learning about the four main sort of roles that mothers without mothers would benefit from seeking out in their communities. And she talks about how fired up she is about supporting mothers who are at this particular juncture in their life. It's a really sweet conversation, and I really hope that it touches you. Lots of love.
Okay, welcome, Melissa. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Grace. I'm so happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to just start by having you introduce yourself, anything you'd like to share, and anything that feels true about how your grief is living in your body today.
Okay, so my name is Melissa Riley. I am a clinical psychologist and a coach that works specifically with moms who don't have the support and guidance of a loving mom in their life. And grief has been part of my life since I was a young child. And so it lives in my very personality. It's part of who I am. It is part of how I interact with the world. And at different times in my life, it has been distressful. And other times in my life, it's just as natural as any other emotion and experience like love and joy and family.
Beautiful. I love what you said about the way that it shifts over time, you know, and the way that it has become a real part of your personality. And could, I'd love for you to expand on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was born into a family with both parents, mom and dad. I had an older sister who was a year and a half older than I, and then my younger sister was born a year and a half younger. When I was back up a little bit. My younger sister was born premature. And so there was some instability and fear, you know, about her survival and health. Wonderfully, fortunately, things worked out just fine for her. And then shortly after that, my older sister was diagnosed with leukemia. And in the 1970s, leukemia was almost always terminal. There was very few options available back then. So she, you know, went through treatments. My parents did everything they could and were there for her and tried to be there for me and my younger sister as much as possible. But unfortunately, after about 2 years of the illness, my sister at the age of 7 died, and I was 4 years old at that time. So my earliest memories include trips to the hospital, include wearing masks because my sister was home. The never-ending question, when is Kim coming home? And then turning into moments of silence and feeling guilty because I wanted to play, but I knew things weren't okay. You know, recalling the day of the funeral and coming home in the backseat of a car and just wanting to get home because I wanted to keep playing. I wanted to have fun. I was 4 years old. Words like death and heaven and forever and grief, they didn't mean anything to me. I was a child. But I did know enough after having gone through the illness and being around sadness and fear and then grief. I had internalized the ability to sense how people were around me. And so then I would become what they needed to me to be, quiet or good or helpful. And it just became part of who I was. Now, with each developmental milestone, you know, in adolescence, the grief intensified, right? And you know, that showed its ugly head in different ways, acting out and all kinds of unhealthy things. And then in young adulthood and trying to create relationships and, you know, not really navigating that as smoothly as I could have, you know, so grief showed up in different ways throughout my life. And then once I became a mother, it showed up again. And I hadn't expected that. Now, it showed up when I became a mother for another reason, because I had then lost my own mother. She died when I was 25. And then 7 months later, my younger sister also died. So I then became a mother after having lost all female relations in my immediate family. So it was just a difficult process.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome. So, you know, it really isn't surprising that I became a psychologist. I was helping, you know, from the time I was little. And I was good at it. I was good at sensing what people needed. And thankfully there's a career where that also is very helpful.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what you said about like, yeah, being good, being helpful, being you know, what people needed, being available. And as we know, with any experience like that, any pattern, it can either be, you know, a helpful part of us, yes. And it can also turn inward, right? It can also turn. So I'd love to hear, you know, how you feel that pattern sort of in your life in terms of, you know, being available, being what people need, like how has that shifted over time?
Well, in my early adulthood, I had a real difficult time recognizing what it was that I needed and wanted in relationships. So I was really quick to just kind of fade away into the background and go along with what others wanted and needed. So a lot of disappointment, a lot of discomfort, you know. I mean, there were times in my life when I didn't even really know what I wanted to do, you know. So, you know, a group of people would say, let's go to the movies. What movie do you want to watch? Well, I don't know, whatever you want, right? Well, what do you want, Melissa? I don't know. Like, I couldn't even figure out what was separately mine.
Yes.
Because in my head it was, all right, well, what is it that they actually want? And will they want me to want that too? You know, and it was like, you know, I couldn't discern that. I couldn't separate what I thought others wanted for me versus what I wanted. So, you know, I went through my own counseling and so forth. And then of course, my own training and clinical experience and was able to recognize what a healthy emotional boundary was. I was able to start distinguishing what is mine versus what is others. And then I started to verbalize. I would start to say, well, this is what I want, or I'm not comfortable with that. And that would create intense anxiety, intense discomfort, because that fear of, you know, being rejected, or, you know, somebody leaving, right? Somebody not being there for me anymore, a loss of a relationship, which, you know, is traumatic. But in adulthood, it isn't traumatic. It's only traumatic for children, because if you lose a parent figure in particular, you die, right? We can't survive as children without being cared for. But if I lose somebody now, I can still feed myself. I can still pay my bills. My life is no longer in danger if I'm rejected or abandoned. But our bodies still react as if that happens, right? Until we become aware of that process and actively do things to change it. Mm-hmm. So once I became aware of just how intense that draw to stay connected was, and how it impacted my everyday decisions and relationships and interactions, I was able to seek out, you know, the type of counseling I needed, seek out relationships where I was safe setting limits and saying yes and no, and that's not okay with me, and saying goodbye to those relationships that were just too tumultuous to sustain that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's bringing up for me the difference between safety and being unsafe and discomfort, right? And so much of the work that I do with people is helping them to distinguish that in their bodies, right?
Yes.
Because as you just spoke to, we will react as if we're unsafe if our bodies don't know the difference, right?
Right. Absolutely. And in my world, I use the two phrases, distress versus discomfort, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so how important it is to define what we're feeling as discomfort mm-hmm. rather than distress. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't define it, if we don't differentiate, then our body will always go to that distress place because there's survival benefit in it, right?
Totally.
Yeah. But most discomfort isn't life-threatening and we can handle it. You know, an analogy, Grace, I like to use often is the difference between being hurt versus being wounded, right? Mm-hmm. So we do not go through life without being hurt. That is just natural, right? So if I were to pinch you on your hand, it would hurt, right? You wouldn't like it. But you'd be okay, right? The pain would go away and there'd be no problem. Now, if I were to tear some skin off of your hand, right? It would not only hurt, but it would create a wound, right? That needed treatment and it would need to heal, and potentially would leave a scar, right? So it's the wounds in life that we need to do things about, but not every hurt is a wound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we don't, you know, well, something that I always come back to is if we don't, you know, let the grief out, if we don't process it, if we don't express it, right, then it does sort of pile up in the body. It does become sort of calcified.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and in your own experience.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that is one of the reasons why I became so passionate about working with Moms Without a Mom. Mm-hmm. Because when my son was born, I was just a few days shy of 38. So here I'd been a clinical psychologist for many years. My mom had died 11 years before. So I, you know, done the grieving. I had gone through milestones, you know, marriages, divorces, jobs, graduating with my doctorate, you know, all those things. Right. So I felt like I knew, you know, what I was doing anyway. Mm-hmm. So when my son was born, I was overwhelmed with feelings of inadequacy, insecurity. I felt like there was something wrong with me because I had no idea what I was doing. And so I felt shame. Why was it that despite my education, my training, my confidence in who I was as a woman, I couldn't get my stuff together enough to take care of my kid? I mean, I was taking care of my kid, but I felt horrible. Well, it took some time for me to realize that what I was experiencing was grief, as well as the unique challenges and circumstances that moms without a mom face. Mm-hmm. And any mom who doesn't have support and guidance from her mom is a mom without a mom, whether she's alive or deceased. If you don't have a loving, supporting relationship, then you don't have her, right? Mm-hmm. And so, because I didn't know that and I didn't recognize that this was actually a thing, I was left to just feel badly about myself. Mm-hmm. And it impacted my self-esteem, my confidence, and I was just getting so stuck. But fortunately, I continued to work and I had a large number of moms in my practice. And I started to notice these patterns among the other moms who didn't have a mom, these similarities. And I thought, there's really something to this. And so I did some research, being the psych nerd that I am. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find much because there isn't a lot out there. So again, I continued, you know, working and doing my thing. And within the last couple of years, I started to realize that I was developing this framework, the sense of what are those key points? What are those differences? And what can we do about that? And I realized that grief was a big part of our experience, whether we recognized it as grief or not, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the grief over a mother, whether it was grief over the desire to have a mother, the grief over our children not having a close relationship with a grandmother, right? Mm-hmm. It was the lack of a mom community in the same way we would have had with our mother, because moms function as a go-to person. Mm-hmm. And some differences in our own mom identity, right? Who are we as a mom if we don't have a mom to learn from? So once I started kind of putting all of that together and started, you know, recognizing these patterns and really doing my own work around all of that, that I realized that I needed to share this, right? I needed to do something about this because I don't want other moms to feel as badly as I did about myself. And I had all these resources, right? You know, I had all these things behind me and I still felt terrible because I didn't have the awareness that there were differences. So now I'm on this mission and you know, very driven and very excited to share with other moms without a mom, that they aren't alone, that there isn't something wrong with them, that they feel different because they are different, and that's okay.
Mm. They feel different because they are different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm. Yeah. So once I healed and continue to heal with my grief, because I see grief as transformative, it never ends, right?
Yeah.
It transforms over time. And as my healing process is, you know, continued, I've taken that energy that at certain times has been draining and diminishing of my life. Now I take it and use it to enhance and energize my life and do that with others as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, it's really such important work. I mean, I'm thinking about this from a very personal place right now, because I'm kind of in this pre-conception time. Like, I'm not getting pregnant, hopefully anytime soon. But, you know, I'm kind of, me and my partner are starting to think about, you know, shaping our life, creating a new life. And my situation is a little bit unique in that I have two moms. So I was raised by lesbians in this like lesbian community. So I have one mom and then I have one dead mom. And so there's a real grief about,
yes,
thinking about, you know, raising my future children without the mom who gave birth to me, you know.
Yes.
And there's also real relief in, at least now, knowing that they have another grandmother, you know. So there's so many different layers to that grief and that like understanding.
Absolutely. You know, and for me, I spent most of my adult life thinking I wouldn't have children either, because there was a lot of mental health and physical health problems in my family. Mm-hmm. And my first husband spent 10 years telling me that my genes should stop with me. You know, we shouldn't continue those. Well, obviously that's why he's my ex-husband, or one of the reasons he's my ex-husband. But I bought into that. I bought into, right, how am I going to be a good mom with all these other things, right? And then, you know, when I didn't have a mom, you know, it made it even harder. How am I going to be a good mom? But, you know, you figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a real, like, I've been reflecting a lot about the way that losing our moms in early adulthood really kind of forces us to mature, you know, in a, yes, deep way, and kind of step up to the plate and really get to know ourselves in a deeper way than we might need to otherwise. And I'd love to hear, you know, what you see with the people that you work with in terms of, you talk some about the patterns, but, you know, what do they struggle with and what do they need to know?
Okay. So, you know, it's interesting you said about, you know, losing your mother in young adulthood. There's actually research backing that up, right? Mm-hmm. I just this weekend finished my manuscript for my book, Thriving as a Mom Without a Mom. So I'm so excited. But part of, you know, so I'm very familiar with all of that research, and the age in which we are when we lose our mom impacts us in different ways. So absolutely. Ooh, so
I'm curious about that. Could you say more?
Yes. Yes. So when we are young adults, right, the big developmental milestones is developing relationship as well as identity. Mm-hmm. So when we lose our mother, we aren't able to finish the individuation process from them, right? There's a sense of disconnecting. Who are we that's separate? And so there's that reworking of that need to do that, that has to happen without her, right? And it is very common, very, very common for there to be some conflict as we individuate. Very common for mothers and daughters to have some conflict, to struggle a little bit in later teens and early 20s to mid 20s. And so if she dies in the middle of that, that doesn't get resolved. Mm-hmm. Right. Which adds, and that was my personal experience. My mom and I had a falling out before she died, and it wasn't able to be resolved. So there's that extra feeling of guilt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the second part of your question with regards to what can moms do first is build intentionally a mom community. Mm-hmm. So when you have a healthy relationship with your mother, she tends to be a go-to person, and she fills four important roles. One, she is a wise woman, so she gives information. So in our mom community, we need to find wise women, right? Those that know things and can give advice. Mm-hmm. And all of these can be professionals as well as friends, family, it doesn't matter. For me, the teachers in my son's nursery school functioned as wise women for me often. Mm-hmm. The second is emotional supporter. So this is somebody who doesn't try to give advice or cheer you up. They just listen. They let you be where you are. The third is what I call the go-getter. This is the person that is really good at getting things done. They have tons of energy. They're efficient at getting tasks. I am not a go-getter. I still have laundry in my washing machine from like 5 days ago, but so that isn't me. And the fourth person, late night talker. So somebody we can reach out to at any time, day or night. And since most people don't fill all four of those, in fact, almost nobody does, unless it's that mother-daughter relationship, we need to put many people into our lives, right? And be able to have somebody fitting all of those categories. And we have to be intentional about it. Mm-hmm. So that's one area. Mm-hmm. You know, that I think women can start working on.
Yeah, it's really, it sounds so simple to say, but it's like, I think it really speaks to the need for all of us to be held by a collective. You know, I think that one of the major harms that like capitalism and individualism has done is it kind of has taught us that our pain is best carried alone, you know? Right. And that we do need multiple people, right? It's not healthy to expect one person to be everything.
Right, of course not. We are not biologically designed to provide all of the needs of our family by ourselves. Mm-hmm. We just aren't. That's not how we are made. And so, yes, it is ridiculous that our society promotes this idea that moms should be able to do it all. Yeah. Absolutely not. And it's also ridiculous to think that, you know, an emotion like grief should be carried by ourselves, because the purpose of all emotion is connection within a community. Mm-hmm. Right? All emotion. That's why we as humans and, you know, other higher order mammals, primates in particular, have emotion. It's so that we can live together in community, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So even anger and guilt have a pro-social purpose to them. Mm-hmm. Guilt is the same, right? And so to deny the comfort and connection that grief provides, we are doing ourselves such a disservice. And that is why we feel it physically, because it creates an elevation in distress. And then all, of course, the distress chemicals get flushed through our system and all of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah. Is there a particular story that you would like to share about either in your own life or somebody that you've worked with in terms of their process of finding this community and kind of what it did for them or you?
Yes. So I moved to the town that I live in less than a year before my son was born. So I was very much isolated, and my pregnancy was a high risk pregnancy. So I was on bed rest for a number of months. So very much alone. And being an introvert, finding help was not something I was comfortable with. You know, finding friends has always been a little hard for me because I am an introvert. But after a couple of years, I hit a low point. You know, I was like, I can't sustain this. I need to be more active in what I'm doing. And my son was doing well. I was able, he had just started kindergarten. And so I actively put myself out. I became active in my son's preschool guidance committee, which is their governing body. I was elected into my church's council. I was asked to be on a governor's committee. And so I started engaging in more adult things, right? Things that prior to becoming a mom, I was active in. And I sought out the friendship and guidance of some of the members within my church community, which became easier because now I was on council. And I became a Sunday school teacher for the parents of kids that were birthed to elementary school. And so this was putting me in small groups regularly, and I was starting to create these shared interests and developed friendships that way, and became more comfortable finding my people. And it was through these interactions that I found members of each of those four categories. So it took years, right? This isn't a just, you know, write them down on a list and go get them, right? But you have to be intentional about it. You have to put the work in. People aren't going to magically fall into your lap.
And what did that do for you as a mother?
Oh my goodness, it has so freed me up to be not only a better mother, but a healthier person in general. So for example, my son is now in his elementary school musical. Yay, it's so exciting, right? So his best friend is also in the musical. So I work late on Wednesdays. So she picks the kids up on Wednesdays, and then I pick the kids up on Thursday because I get off early. So we've got this little thing going on, right? Well, this week, her daughter was sick, so didn't go to school. She texts me, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to bring Jackson home. Like, great, that's awesome. Not a problem at all. I knew it was snowing that day and it was starting to snow. I'm like, they're going to let out early. And I was up at work and the snow is coming down, but I work 45 minutes away. I'm like, oh, great. It's going to get canceled. I'm not going to have to worry about it. Hour after hour was going by, still no cancellation notice. I'm starting to panic, like, oh no, what am I going to do now? So it's not getting canceled. Well, I pulled out, you know, my list of people that I keep it all in one note, you know, so that I can start, you know, calling easily. And I just, you know, one after another, you know, right away, hey, I'm in a bind. Can you help me out? And within a few minutes, I had a ride lined up and ready to go. And so I didn't have this panic. I didn't have this sense of, oh my God, what am I going to do, for more than 10 seconds anyway. I knew I had people to call and I could do that. And I knew if one couldn't do it, I knew the next person I could call and so forth, right down the list.
It's so like, it seems so natural, but it's also like, I mean, really, really common that so few people have very few people to call on. They haven't built up that community intentionally. And don't even know that that's like a thing to do.
Well, right. Because, you know, the assumption is, well, your family will help you out.
Right.
Well, if you don't have family, it's okay to reach out to people who aren't your family. You don't have to just say, I don't have family. I have to do it all myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because again, we're not designed to do that. And let's face it, right? If somebody asked you to do something, would you feel like they were a burden? Of course not. But yet that goes through our head. I don't want to burden somebody. Okay. So when was the last time you thought somebody else asked you something that they were a burden? We don't think like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. And what would you like to say about like how you see that kind of deepening and developing over the lifespan of a mom? Because I'm thinking about like the way that our own grief and like your own grief and your motherhood sort of dances together. Yeah, I'd love to just hear you riff on that for a little bit.
Yeah, well, there's so many things, you know, connected with the grief process itself, right? We get triggered at unexpected times, and that's okay. When we notice it as grief, we can just embrace it and keep going. So for example, when my son was a number of years younger, he played Little League. He's not the athlete, just totally fine, but he had lots of heart. So we're at his game one day and I'm watching him and he's trying so hard to get a walk because he couldn't hit the ball. Right. And he was scared of the ball. So he just wanted to walk and everyone's cheering for him. And all of a sudden I felt this urge to turn to my side and talk to my mom about it. My mom had been dead for like more than a decade and a half. And yet in that moment, I had that desire. Well, it's because my mother was my own Little League coach when I was a kid. So out of the blue, right, there was something about what he was doing that triggered that memory in me that I didn't even recognize I was having a memory. And boom, there it was. And so I started feeling sad and I just started feeling a little melancholy and disconnected. But I recognized, oh, okay, wait a minute. This is grief. This is what's going on. It's okay. It's all right to feel this. It's all right. But in this moment, I want to be present. So I pulled my attention back to what I was experiencing and continued to enjoy his game, right? Because I knew what was going on. I had done the work to recognize grief and how it shows up in my life. I didn't judge myself. I didn't put myself down. I just went with it. I acknowledged it, embraced it. And I gave myself permission to have the conversation with my mom as if she were there anyway, mm-hmm. right? And just didn't feel badly about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just kept going. So I think as moms, it's important to recognize things like that will come at different times.
Mm.
And that's okay. Just keep going, right? Acknowledge it, keep going. And if you have a hard time, keep going. That's when you seek out assistance, right? That's when you seek out coaches like yourself, you know, or like me, you know, or therapy, you know, it's time to get help so that you don't get stuck mm-hmm. in that grief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about sort of the whole span of becoming a mother, and I'm really curious what you know, and also like the physiological experience of being pregnant, and you know, giving birth, and how that, you know, I imagine really kind of on a spiritual level can connect us to our dead moms. And I'm really curious about that aspect and how that shows up.
Absolutely. Well, pregnancy and, you know, the whole process is uniquely female.
Mm-hmm.
So it absolutely connects us to the generations that have come before us. For me personally, it was a bit of a complicated process because I unfortunately had three miscarriages prior to my son, and then went into labor during the second trimester with my son, which then led to the bed rest. And so there was a lot of fear. And again, death, so yeah, connected with my birth experience, right? And I knew my mother had a miscarriage. And of course, she had the death of her first child. Mm. And I really wished that I could process that with her. And she wasn't available. So I started journaling and writing her letters. So not just writing about my own experience, but directing my thoughts and my emotions to her. Mm. And that was very healing for me. Mm. In the interviews that I've done, in the process of preparing for my book, one of the very common features of moms who had lost their mom before they gave birth was feeling vulnerable and saddened during pregnancy, mm-hmm, and closely postpartum, right? That was a particular time of grief, mm-hmm, and sadness. And so those moms that don't have a mom, I want you to be aware that your risk of postpartum depression is elevated because you've already experienced a loss. And it's okay. You don't have to fear that. Just be aware of it so that you can seek out the support and providers. You know, postpartum is very treatable, but it's real. And your risk is just slightly elevated, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to have the village, right? Like,
yep.
But there's so, in terms of like the whole birthing process, it's like, I think people tend to plan like up to when they give birth, and then it's like, okay, I guess we'll just figure it out. And it's like, no, you actually need a whole plan. You need a whole village. You need a whole system of support to step in at that time.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And my birth plan, it wasn't, I mean, that went right out the window once I, you know, was on bed rest, because, you know, this was 12 years ago. So it was before telemedicine was a thing. So I couldn't go to birthing classes. I didn't get the labor and delivery tour, none of that. So I was terrified. All I could do was read books. And like I said, none of my, you know, I didn't have any female family. I had a beloved aunt and we were very close, but not close enough to talk about some of those really scary things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so important to have those sisters, you know, people who really can just step in and be with us.
Yeah. And as an older mother, like my best friend, her kids were teenagers. So it was just a different spot in life.
Yeah, you're in your like perimenopause time, which is a very different,
right?
Yeah, different time.
Yep, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And we've kind of started to touch on this, but how has and how does spirit sort of show up in your grief process, in your work? What's that connection for you?
Well, my faith life is very important to me. And so I'm part of a Lutheran church community, and I feel the presence of spirit in my day-to-day life as much as I can. I, you know, in my prayers, in my awareness, and I try, you know, in my religious reading the Bible, that helps me feel connected. From the time I was a little, my parents always talked about heaven as a place where we will see our you know, dead loved ones. So growing up, you know, spirit was again something of death. Mm-hmm. As an adult, and the through the community. At my church, within the last 8 years, I've worked really hard at recognizing spirit, not just of being for those that are dead, but for those that are alive. And So I talk and pray, you know, not only to God, but conversations with my loved ones. Mm-hmm. And I really feel their presence at different times in my life. One of my favorite actually things to do is my church has a quiet Christmas service. Mm-hmm. And I go to that every year because at that Christmas service, and I go alone, like the rest of my family doesn't go. Mm-hmm. I go alone and I really call to mind all of my extended family who's passed. Mm-hmm. And it's very comforting. And sometimes I wind up laughing because my sister and I, when we were kids with Christmas service, we would just create all kinds of mischief. So like I laugh, like I call that back and I feel them in the pew with me. Mm-hmm. And then that frees me up for the other Christmas services, right? Mm. To be completely present with my family here on earth. So.
Mm. Yeah, it's bringing up that word intention again, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. That is my word for the year.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Because, you know, it makes me think about, I often invite my clients to create like a grief sanctuary. Mm-hmm. In their home, or you know, a place where they can go and really be in their grief so that they have intentional time with it so they can be present in the rest of their day and lives. And that's kind of what the practice makes me think of.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think part of what I've created for myself, you know, is that in my journals. Like I have separate journals for the people I care about, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of when I pull that out. You know, it's my special space and time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share, perhaps for anyone who's listening who may be grieving a mom, or maybe a mom with a dead mom?
Well, what's most important to me is I want you to know that what you're feeling is normal for a mom without a mom. You aren't alone. There isn't something wrong with you. You feel different because you are different. And being a mom without a mom is hard. And if you're struggling, reach out. There is help available. Reach out to friends, to counselors, to therapists. Reach out to me. You know, I am happy to talk more with you. Because you don't have to be alone. We're not meant to be alone.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Where can people find you if they'd like to stay connected?
Well, I would love to stay connected. I am, and my website is momswithoutamom.com. I'm on social media, Instagram, TikTok, also as Moms Without a Mom. Facebook. I have a Facebook group. It's really small, but it's really active and engaging, called Thriving as a Mom Without a Mom. Mm-hmm. And so I would invite any listeners that are interested, they can certainly join us there to not only get support, but tips and advice and suggestions, and just a place to share your mom wins as well as your mom fears.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Melissa. It was really great talking to you.
You are very welcome. I appreciate it. And in May, you know, my book will be out. And so Thriving as a Mom Without Mom, you can find that as well. And lots of great support in there.
Amazing. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, dear listener, for going on this journey with me. Much gratitude to Beautiful Chorus and Naomi Westwater for the beautiful opening and closing music. If you resonate with this podcast, you can show your appreciation by leaving a generous review and by sharing it with your communities. You can also join my Grief Village community on Patreon, where we have twice monthly Move Your Grief Circles, a monthly Q&A, and an ever-growing collection of meditations, practices, and other resources. Details to join, as well as more information about my work, are in the show notes. Thank you for your support. Until next time, have a soulful day.